Well, good evening. Welcome to the May 2nd meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. We'll get started initially here with introductions, starting on my far left.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Spencer Stegman, North Kitsap.
Good evening. Rick Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
Joe Phillips from Central.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Care Ann Gonzalez-Harless, South Kitsap.
Gina Buskirk, Central Kitsap.
Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. And I think we're going to propose to adjust the agenda and move up the public hearing up to after item D, after administrative report. That way folks that are here for the public hearing, they can go ahead and we'll deal with that first and then go on to our work study items. So do I have a motion for that?
I'll move to move up the public hearing to after the administrative report.
With a second.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Okay, none. Okay, and then with that, we do have some meeting minutes in front of us from April 25th and April 27th. Is there a motion for adoption?
Move to adopt the meeting.
Meeting minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor? Opposed? Abstain. Okay. Got that? All right. And now we'll go on to administrative report. Is that going to be...
There's no administrative report for this evening.
Well, that'll be brief. Okay. Thank you. All right. So with that, the public hearing for the critical areas ordinance, which this is actually our last public hearing. We had one last Tuesday in Silverdale and then Thursday in Paulsbo. And this one here, obviously, down here at the south end of the county. So, Kathleen, if you would, give us a quick rundown, and then we'll go ahead and take public testimony.
All right. Well, bear with me here again. Good evening, Planning Commission. For the record, Kathleen Barnhart, Planner, Kitsap County Department of Community Development. We are here this evening to hold the final of three public hearings being offered for Planning Commission on Title 19 Critical Areas Ordinance Update. As with the previous hearings, before we begin, I'd like to take just a few minutes to give a brief background. The Growth Management Act of Washington requires counties and cities to review and evaluate comprehensive plans and development regulations and update them if necessary according to a schedule established by the legislature. Kitsap County adopted its comprehensive plan in June of 2016. The county's review of development regulations included the Critical Areas Ordinance, or CAO, in Kitsap County Code Title 19. Kitsap County's last update to the CAO was in 2005 with limited amendments in 2009. This current update is intended to ensure compliance with state and federal mandates, incorporation of any best available science since the 2005 update, consideration and incorporation of recent Growth Management Hearing Board decisions, and correction of code conflicts or other internal inconsistencies. Local jurisdictions are granted a one-year grace period beyond the deadline for their comprehensive plans, and as such, Kitsap County's CAO update is now due June 30th of 2017. In the summer of 2016, Kitsap County staff convened an informal working group comprised of technical experts from the applicable state resource agencies such as Ecology, Natural Resources, and Fish and Wildlife, as well as tribes and representatives from key stakeholder organizations. This group reviewed the current CAO alongside a bibliography and summary of best available science, the county's initial review of best available science since the last update. After incorporating feedback from this external working group, internal and legal review, the draft critical areas ordinance was released for public review and comment from March 1st through 31st of this year. During this time, Kitsap County provided a 24/7 online open house forum in addition to three traditional in-person open houses, one in each district. The invitation was also provided to meet and discuss with any interested organization. During that comment period, Kitsap County received approximately 400 individual comments in the form of letters, emails, and online submissions. Those were provided to the Planning Commission and posted online in three forms on April 18th. All original comments, including letters, the comment summary, which summarized all the comments received, as well as a summary response matrix, which compiled comments by topic or code sections with the county's response. Planning Commission held two work studies on the draft CAO April 4th and 18th. And just to briefly summarize the changes that we discussed, we have Chapter 19-100, Introduction and Approval Procedures, which includes things such as exemptions for pre-existing and ongoing agriculture. We also had some conversation around the provision for danger tree removals. Definitions, there were changes largely for consistency with applicable state resource agency guidelines. Some were deleted because they are defined in other code chapters. They still apply, but will reduce the odds of conflicting definitions should one change. And some were added to provide better clarity to code. In the wetlands chapter, so since 2014, Kitsap County has been operating under the revised wetland rating system. We are proposing changes to this chapter to match the revised system, including scoring for wetland categories. There are three particular scenarios where standard wetland buffers would increase, but also three would decrease. In all are for Category 1 and 2 wetlands, not particularly common in Kitsap County. This draft does include a proposed reduction in allowance for administrative buffer reductions, but also provides more options and flexibility for mitigation. Fish and Wildlife Habitat Conservation Areas. We removed references to shorelines where appropriate. These are now regulated under our Shoreline Master Program, Title 22. We talked about changes to how bald eagles are managed and other similar changes similar to the wetlands chapter. Our Geologically Hazardous Areas chapter, section or chapter 400. This chapter had enough updates that we wanted to reorganize it. It does look different, but by and large, the development standards are the same, as well as the criteria used for mapping. The technologies are far advanced of what was available during the drafting of the current map, so that you'll notice that. And then chapter 500, Frequently Flooded Areas, references our Title 15 Flood Hazard Areas code, which was recently updated. Aquifer recharge areas, we had a discussion on how water quantity was added as consideration, as well as more clarity to required elements in our special reports chapter, and minor edits consistent with code and new templates and checklists added to our appendices. So before we move forward, I would like to add that we have received many public comments so far, both during the March comment period and during this hearing process, and you will be receiving those later. We have also been working closely with our prosecuting attorney's office to address multiple court cases mentioned in those comments. So following tonight's hearing, the Planning Commission will hold deliberations on May 16th and 23rd, and on June 6th, the Planning Commission's recommendations and comments will be formalized and sent to the Board of County Commissioners for their consideration. So that is all I have. Are there any questions? Thank you.
So there was a sign-up sheet in back. I think there's still one there. So if by chance you did not sign up, you do want to speak, if you would, go ahead and put your name up on the sign-up sheet. And just a reminder, when you come up, if you would, please state your name and address for the record. And we've been fairly consistent with 5 minutes for testimony. We'll stand with that, so 5 minutes, if you would. And you'll see the timer over there. I believe it'll give you a beep with 1 minute to go, and then it'll go solid after 5 minutes. So if you would, let's please be courteous regarding time. And the first name on the list is Mr. William Palmer.
For the record, I'm William M. Palmer. I'm here representing the Kitsap Alliance Property Owners Organization, and I passed out ahead of time a letter, which I believe each individual Planning Commission member has, as well as a couple for staff. And I'm just going to highlight the 10 issues that are identified in the letter. They have to do with the why of the CAO, how the CAO effectiveness is determined, practical basis for the current revision is not evident, what is the economic impact of the CAO, and what are the takings considerations. Reasonable use is a site-specific and not universal, application of CAO not consistent with other county code titles. Commissioner intent statement not specific and clear. No effective public participation is required by GMA. And the Department of Commerce checklist didn't find any particular reference to that in the update or the staff documentation for what took place in the CAO. We have questions about who's actually in charge of the draft of the critical areas ordinance. And all of these issues are things that we have presented testimony about or on in only the comment period between March 1st and March 31st, but in subsequent meetings with DCD staff and individual county commissioners. We, as yet, do not believe we have satisfactory answers to any of the issues that are identified. We know that there's a lot more that can be said about the sub-points under each of the 10, and we're happy to provide any supplemental written documentation for those issues if the Planning Commission so desires. But our experience tells us that, for the most part, comments of our organization will be either ignored or minimized. And I thought it was interesting when I reviewed the list of changes to the CAO that are found on the back table. I couldn't identify in any of those proposed changes a response to any citizen concern, not just from our organization, but from any other citizen comment. If we had 400 such comments, did not one of them make the list or tip the scales to cause a change or proposed amendment to the ordinance as drafted? Contrary to my finding, maybe there was a change that's not referenced or identified in the list that is found on the back table, but I wonder why. Why doesn't citizen comment count? Why doesn't it produce some changes to the document? We were told, our organization was told by DCD staff that once the document was published, they planned no changes in response to comments. I find that basically unconscionable. What we found in this ordinance, we also had similar findings back in 2005, that there's no baseline documentation for any of the critical areas. There's a definition. There's not even a good, solid treatise on what constitutes functions and values of any of the critical areas. And yet, we propose rules. We have no definition of a problem that exists, or what kind of solution is appropriate to address that problem. This tips the scales for us to regulation for regulation's sake. We have been unalterably opposed to that in all our 15, 16 years of existence, and we will continue to oppose any and all regulations for regulation's sake. Thank you.
Any questions? Excuse me. Richard?
I was not aware that there was an errata sheet that had been prepared. Is there a...
It says summary of changes, introduction, definitions. They're all referenced to Title 19. I'm assuming that that's changes to the draft document, but maybe it's just changes to the existing CAO, which are not... It's not well identified if that's the latter case.
So I believe there's an actual matrix of the comments, and right, then there's also a column, right, that the county indicates what they're doing or staff, how they're responding to the comments.
Right. What I think Mr. Palmer is describing, though, is an errata sheet of changes that have been made in the draft since we've received the
maybe
draft.
I've misinterpreted this document. I'll grant you that, but it talks about summary of changes. And it's not clear whether there are changes to the draft ordinance or whether there are changes to the existing ordinance.
Looks like Kathleen's ready to comment. If you would, please.
Yes. So the summary of changes document that you found on the back table was from the draft before, as it came out with the initial public draft that came out in March. So that does not address any public comments. Those are on the public comment matrices, which are also available online and on the back table.
And you realize...
But my point was no changes as a result of...
Mr. Palmer, you realize that we have not deliberated on these changes at all. We have not brought the comments into debate yet to be able to publish. So I kind of find it offensive that you come up and say that nothing has been done.
Well,
we have collected information. We have not deliberated on it.
No, I did not direct those comments to the Planning Commission. I directed them to staff because they were in charge of the document before it got submitted to the Planning Commission. And nothing was worthy of change based on public comment. That was the focus of my comments.
Question before you leave. Do you have specific items for changing, or I don't know if you submitted other documentation other than this? I know there's been, you know, some specific discussions regarding buffer averaging and that, and I think whatever, as they say, some more site-specific tools that allow them to go ahead and adjust some of the issues. Have you actually put forth any comments specific to those items?
We put forward comments relative to some court cases that we felt should have been influential in the draft of this update, and we found no evidence that those court cases that we addressed, and those were comments that we submitted during the comment period. We identified the Skagit County case as one instance where there was no response to that. Well, except there was, the staff did respond, basically minimizing the first hearings board, Western Hearings Board decision, and ultimately a state Supreme Court's decision that says riparian buffers are not required. We asked specifically in our testimony what species of animal, birds, or amphibians are we trying to protect in our riparian buffers? We got no response to that other than, yes, there are some, but none that are listed as endangered, threatened, or even made the third list, which is possible, can't remember the term, but something that possibly should be considered. None of those, and yet we've got, in a couple of cases, a proposal for 300-foot buffer on a Class 2 wetland, and we don't know what we're protecting with that 300, or even whether the 300 feet provides any more protection than the 125 or 225 that we had before. We get things like that. We posed these questions and got no response. And we felt that the questions should have prompted some changes in the ordinance if the analysis had been carried out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions? Thank you. Let's see, next on the list, A.J. Bredberg. I guess I should ask, were those also provided directly to staff? We'll make sure they get a copy.
Number 9 is coming down to staff.
Okay.
Coming down. A.J. Bredberg, 3303 43rd Street, Northwest, Gig Harbor, 98335. I've been over 25 years working here in Kitsap County. I do wetlands for a living. I've got over 4,000 projects approved, US EPA, Army Corps, Kitsap County, 100, 2, 3. I have no idea how many hundreds of projects in Kitsap County. 10 years ago, I testified the same thing. I don't come out of the woodwork too often. I do research. I've got about 30 scientific publications in preparation to be published. I work around the world. And what you have here is, you see at the top of that number in orange, it says, you read what it says? It says, water in these wetlands flows only in one direction, down the slope. Stop laughing. This is serious. And it's just, after it goes, the downhill side of the wetland is always the point of lowest elevation in the wetland. So downhill is always lower. And do you know where this comes from? Flip the page. Son of a gun, 2014 update. This is what you're sitting here going to approve for the critical areas ordinance. And I find this a personal insult to have to work with this stuff as a professional. Now let's keep going. Got you laughing, now we're getting serious. So let's go to the next page, introduction. And you see in orange, I did these myself. I heard about this a couple hours ago. Collective judgment of regional experts. So in 2004, they came up with the first rating form, and now we're this rating system. And the rating system is what we use to establish the buffers. So you rate your wetland according to the DOE manual, then you go out and establish the buffer from it. And keep in mind, water runs downhill. And the lowest point of the wetland's always downhill. That's the mentality we're dealing with. So this new rating system is better because it's a collective judgment of regional experts. Is that best available science, which we'll get to later? This is how the regional experts feel a wetland should be rating. Flip to the next page. Maybe ever do we have in preface? It says preface. I might have had mine wrong. I get a little confused at my age. But the first, what we're getting rid of is the 2004-2006 system that scoring functions from 0 to 100 could not be supported by the science. That's the system we've been using for 14 years now. It's taken the DOE 14 years to figure out that what we've been using for 14 years cannot be supported by science. We want to work, we've been using a system that has no support by science, according to DOE. But remember, water runs downhill. And so they've come in, they're going to improve the system. Instead of, we used to do 0 to 100 for wetland rating, but now they say that doesn't work. So we're going to use the collected judgment of regional experts, how they feel about it. And the new system uses high, medium, low. I got out of bed on the wrong side today and I feel kind of low. So we're going to give this a bad rating. I deal with this crap every day. The old system, I could go out there in 15 minutes and knock off that wetland rating and come up with 0 to 100. I'd charge them $300 and feel guilty. The new system, if you get into the manual, says 2 people, 8 hours. And then you go back to the office and they've got a whole list of figures I have to make. It's about 6 hours. It's 20 hours to rate a wetland. I'm dealing with this crap in Snohomish County and Pierce County. Somebody wants to build a $5,000 garage. They got two wetlands on their property. I'm $3,000 just to rate the stinking wetlands. So that's what this is about, getting down to monetary form. Now, moving on to peer review and public update. This is in the DOE's manual. It says, the rating system is based on best information available at this time and meets the needs of best available science and growth management act. If you go over to, I've got a minute, go over to the last page, this is pulled out of the wax. Go down to my little arrow down there, what's best available science, peer review. And you can read this under number one, peer review. This document was a group of people down at DOE that got together and made the document, they passed it around amongst themselves, and they called that a peer review. It's not an independent peer review. It's not scientifically reviewed. There is no quantitative analysis. And these are the people that says, water runs downhill, and you as a planning commission are going to codify in Kitsap County that water runs downhill, and the bottom of the hill is lower than the top of the hill. And that's the mentality we're dealing with. You know, Palmer's up here talking his stuff. Here's the facts. And this is a house of cards. And this is the card. You pull the card out, and you realize the emperor's naked. And I'm done. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes.
Mr. Bredberg, we did hear testimony from DOE last meeting that a reduction in buffer averaging allowance from 50% to 25% represented best available science. The question to you is, if we have an expert that has been in the field that knows the wetland that's being involved, why shouldn't we give the DCD the authority to keep the 50% buffer reduction? Doesn't that make more sense to let the local expert work with the county to come up with what's best for our area rather than willy-nilly reducing it to 25%?
Absolutely. And I have not had a chance to look at the ordinance. This, I just heard about this meeting a couple hours ago, and I got in here. I just knocked these off. And Snohomish County is a very nice thing in their code. It's called innovative design, that this county consultants and the private consultant can get together and just go completely away from code and figure out what's best. And that's real handy in some situations, because there's some things that you really want to do what's right, but you can't because code doesn't allow it. And you might want to take a look at Snohomish County's innovative design and you just plug it in there, and it's all up to staff, and you have to trust staff. And innovative design is real handy. And the buffers, you've got to give that 50% reduction, because it comes in so handy. You have a wetland, has this little tiny finger that comes out 100 feet, and it's 10 feet wide, little dinky thing. Do you know how big the 100-foot buffer is on that little thing? It's acres. If you can cut it the tip down to 50%, it saves, it's just fair to the landowner. And actually, when you have that little tiny tip of a wetland, the DOE manual says you cannot rate a wetland two different categories. So if you have a big old peat bog category one wetland, a little dinky wetland, stinky thing that goes up 200-300 feet into somebody's property, guess what? It's rated categories one, just like the giant one. Now, the other thing with this DOE manual, the old one is the same, there is nothing for size. You can have a 10-square-foot wetland and a 10,000-acre wetland. They will rate the same. And I'm not going to say it about size.
Cass, any other questions?
In your past experience, has Kitsap County staff been amenable to what you have brought to them?
I talked to Dave Greetham this morning. We had a long conversation. He left, and Dave and I always got along wonderful. And Kitsap County was always one of my bastions in having, you know, for the last 10 years. You know, as long as Dave was here, things went well. I turned my reports into this county. They were fair with everybody. Everybody knew Dave. Everybody around the county spoke well of him as a fair place to work. Now, we all followed code, and we worked with code. And give me code, and I have to work with code. My opinions don't matter other than here in front of the commission. When you give me the code, I cannot work with this and charge my client. I lose my tail on these, doing these wetland rating forms. And so the Kitsap County has always been good to work with. You know, Dave, I talked to him. We've had a good time. We've had discussions, and always with a smile. He said, always with a smile. Intellectual discussions on it.
Comment?
Well, are you, I guess what you've indicated is you're satisfied with how things have been working, correct? Or is it that
in the past, yes. Made? This changing to this new rating system is a huge disaster. And going from a 0 to 100 system to tall, medium, small, it's like ordering a latte. You know, the buffers, you know, Mr. Palm was up here talking about that whole aspect of buffers, best available science. If we had about 2 or 3 weeks here, I could walk through the best available science, what it's based on. For example, they say you need a 300-foot buffer. If you go back to the 1990 document that DOE is basing it on, there was a dairy farm up on a hill, the steep slope. And that dairy farm, the manure ran down the steep slope for 200 feet. I mean, steep slope. And they said that didn't filter the manure. Well, of course not. That was very special circumstances. That is the example in the best available science that DOE uses to establish 200 and 300-foot buffers.
that one example of a dairy farm with its runoff going over about a 60 to 80% slope. I've read these documents. And when they talk about best available science, they pick and choose what they want to use down at DOE. And come on, water runs downhill. This is what you've codified already in the county. I did this, I gave to an international symposium, presented this. They were rolling on the floor until I, you know, admonished them and said, this is Washington State, it's codified. Water runs downhill. It's embarrassing to be a professional working in the industry as a scientist.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next on the list, Jerry Darnell. Sorry if I mispronounced that.
My name is Jerry Darnall. I'm from Kingston with my wife. We run Triple J Farm in Kingston. We farm 15 acres. Some of you I remember from the Ag Code. I'm here to address this with a little bit of an emphasis on the agricultural side of this thing. And I'm not going to look too much at specifics. I do have some I'm going to address toward the end. But I'm a little concerned with the procedure that's going on through here. With the agricultural code, we worked on it for 5 years, more if you consider the old defunct Food and Farm Policy Council. We went through it with you guys line by line, and it affected about 1,000 parcels in Kitsap County. This KOA is going to affect virtually every parcel in Kitsap County, and for some reason, DCD wants to fast track it through. That makes me real uncomfortable. I don't think they've looked at all the issues. I don't know of a single working farm that was on the committee. That bothers me. You guys, we have the ability to develop Kitsap County smart and regular. A farm is not a bad guy. A working farm is going to preserve open land. It's going to preserve the wildlife that they want to preserve, and we're going to move forward if we can keep it out of development. The only way you're going to do that is keep it working. Okay? My recommendations, first of all, when we did the Ag Code, all of you recommended going forward that we appoint an agricultural commission. The commissioners approved the Ag Code with the comment that we would have an agricultural commission by the end of the year. We still don't have one. They've been dragging their feet constantly. Kitsap County is the only Western Washington county that does not have an agricultural council or commission. Kitsap County is currently in violation of RCW 8434-145 by not having an agricultural council. My first request to you guys is going to be to table the current CAO until the Agricultural Commission has a couple of months to review and make their comments back to you guys. Item number two. As I was reading through the matrix of all the complaints and comments, it was kind of interesting. Of over 18 comments and complaints, comments, whatever you want to call it, the canned response from DCD is the CAO draft has been reviewed by staff and Kitsap County Prosecuting Office following the 2015 Attorney General's Advisory Memorandum and recommended process for evaluating proposed regulatory and or administrative actions to avoid unconstitutional taking. Were you guys given a copy of that? It's a beautiful document. Talks about it. It literally can be written to create a checklist that DCD must fill out before it takes any action under the CAO. It's all here, folks. And it's been written by our Attorney General. But I don't see where they've referred to the provisions in answering this question. They're giving you a canned answer. They're making you do the research here. But it is here. And if you didn't read this, you're getting screwed by DCD and the prosecuting attorney. Because it's here. Page 5, paragraph 4 in here clearly states, courts have determined that substantial due process is violated when a government action lacks any reasonable justification or fails to advance a legitimate governmental objective. They have to do that up front. To withstand a claim that principles of substantial due process have been violated, a government action must serve a legitimate government objective. Not a wishy-washy one, a legitimate government objective. Use means that are reasonably necessary to achieve that objective. So if I can get by with a 50-foot buffer, I don't want DCD making it a 100-foot buffer. Not if I can reasonably work it work. And must not be unduly obsessive. Now that kind of information can be done in a checklist that they have to fill out before they take any kind of action under CAO. And my last comment has to do with your definitions. They didn't call it actual definitions, but it's here. If you look on the draft of page 7, 19-100-125, under exemptions, they read pre-existing and ongoing agricultural activities on land containing critical areas. For the purpose of this title, existing and ongoing means the activity has been conducted or maintained within the past 5 years under a farm management plan or other best management practices, not resulting in a net loss of critical area function and values. Folks, I've been selling pigs for 30 years out of Kingston. I've had over 100 wiener pigs in your fairs. I've sold thousands of pounds of pork. We sell blueberries. I have a farm, a barn that is built to hold tons of alfalfa. I have an agricultural grain building. But according to this, I'm not an ongoing and existing agricultural operation. I qualify under your open space agricultural exemption. I filed 35 years of Schedule F with the IRS. I'm not an ongoing existing operation. Now, I do follow BMPs on all of the pigs, pasture rotation, compost pile, all of that stuff. But I was thinking about which ones am I not following. I have two ponds on my property, open area ponds. We also free-range birds. The free-range birds have access to those ponds, which would be in violation of allowing livestock birds within the buffer zone. But depending on the BMPs that you want to put in place, if you talk to the fish folks, they're going to want me to net that entire 10 acres and keep all livestock away from it. If you talk to Ducks Unlimited, they want me to mow up to the water line so the baby ducks can be raised and have any easy access in and out of the property. Just saying BPM farm management plans, it's not an excuse. Unless the county is going to come out and inspect every farm and give us a actual management plan that they want us to follow. When you start telling farmers what they have to do in Kitsap County, as long as I'm not polluting the water, as long as you have no manure runoff, it's ridiculous. You know, and sometimes farmers get really frustrated. At any given time, I might have 30 pigs on the farm. The manure that they create is going back into the pasture. I did a rough calculation. 30 pigs with probably 5 or 6 kids, babies. It would take about 250 years of manure generation to generate what this county accidentally spilled in sewage in 2015.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Jan. Is it? Are you good? You okay? Okay. All right. Next up, Dean Jenegas. Yes, I did.
The real concern I have is that I can, as a past member of the Planning Commission, is that you're supposed to be representative of the citizens. And in the current environment, I don't believe that's taking place. Because as I read this 28-page list of comments, public comments, and I read all the county summary responses. And as was stated before, they're pretty much dismissed. So I'm going to address two of them. And I don't consider this an adversarial relationship here. I worked with Tom before, and I can't believe he's still there. But anyhow, he's a tree hugger. Anyhow, general case law. The county dismisses the need for benchmarks as referenced in the case law as not required unless engaged in adaptive management service. And the reference I'm making is the Swinomish Tribe v. Western Washington. I really recommend you read that. And two lawyers on here, you should be able to tell me whether I'm right, wrong, or indifferent, or don't know what the hell I'm talking about. And I'll accept that. But when it's not read and actions are taken without it being read, I think you're doing an injustice to the citizens. Okay, I disagree with the narrative. It states the enforcement of water course protection measures and the need for more simplicity, specificity in its monitoring programs and adaptive management process. That's within the Swinomish case. But it's not an exclusive statement. It's wrapped up in a whole bunch of a lot of other legal words. And yet it was basically dismissed on this document. This reference to the buffers and the enhancements was noted adaptive management process. Tribes wanted bigger buffers, and then they wanted enhanced buffers on the bigger buffers. And so basically the hearings board says, no way, it's not going to happen. And not only that, you don't need buffers. You don't need riparian buffers at all. So that blew the socks out of the court case. But it keeps getting dismissed in the comments by the county. In the end, buffers is deemed by the Hearing Review Board and Supreme Court by extension. The GMA does not require the county to reference BAS or to establish mandatory riparian buffers. Measurements. Now, in this answer to these questions, states no measurements required. That's kind of an option, I guess. Common sense dictates that to prove if wetlands are required and need protection, some type of comparative analysis needs to happen. How can that be successfully proven and measured if there's never been a condition as is? An as is condition of a wetland. Lived around here since 1943. I can tell you what's a wetland and what isn't just by walking up to it. I can tell you if it's a serious one if I sink up to my knees. And I used to swim in the ponds of them. The concern I have with this critical area ordinance is streams and isolated wetlands. The Department of Ecology wetland summary basically states isolated wetlands generally have no hydrologic connection to other aquatic sources. From the Department of Ecology. Clean Water Act only protects water sources adjacent to and feeding navigable or commerce waters. The county's dismissal of benchmarks makes establishing WAC 201A, 310 Tier 1, protection and maintenance of existing and designated uses, impossible. You've got no baseline. There's no measurement. Tier 2 is the same thing. Existing and designated uses must be maintained and protected. No degradation may be allowed. If you're not measuring it, how do you know if there's degradation? I mean, this whole document, the critical areas document on wetlands, is beyond belief and is taken out of some obscure best available science note somewhere. And the same thing holds for Tier 2. And in Tier 2, it states, in context of this regulation, a measurable change includes temperature, dissolved oxygen, bacteria levels, pH change, etc. How can you do that when, since 2005, there's never been a wetland that had a baseline established on it or an as-is condition? And therefore, you know, you need to go back and take a hard look at this document. It's too egregious for the property owner. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next up, Jay Spady.
Jay Spady, 2283 Aspen Street Southeast, Port Orchard. And just a couple comments on the subject of trails. The old CAO said best to get trails out of critical areas and put them up on the road. A few years back, we asked the county commissioners to do away with the ruinous storm drainage requirements, where if we paved 12 or 24 inches or 4 feet of shoulder on a beautiful compacted gravel shoulder county road, you know, we have to go back and treat storm drainage for the entire roadway. And they responded and they withdrew that ruinous criteria for some of the areas of the county. However, in the UGA, they did not withdraw it. And so now in the areas where we have people and we have needs for non-motorized transportation, we can't build trails on the road for all practical purposes or out in that area. So because the CAO says not in critical areas, not in the wetland buffers, et cetera, put them out on the road. So where are we? We're kind of stuck in the middle. And that's a problem. And here in tonight's bulletin, it shows, for example, viewing platforms should be in the outer 25% of the buffer, except for direct access. Again, what's the best science say? I mean, maybe in the interest of public health, we need to go through a wetland, and maybe there's good science that could support it. I think we ought to have flexibility here, realizing that trails are a form of mitigation, and our air quality, our health, our quality of life really hinges on this, on being able to have some good science and thoughtful discussion and a good research go into the basis for what we do with our areas, our critical areas, whether they're groundwater recharge areas or wetland areas and buffer areas. It needs to be a more thoughtful approach. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, and I'm sorry, I'm having a really tough time reading this one. It's either a D or a P, and then Hauser? Just one initial? No? Okay. Jack Hamilton.
Good evening, Jack Hamilton, Silverdale. Yeah, my predecessors up here pretty well covered things, so I'm going to try this a little bit differently. In 2005, we passed a critical areas ordinance we are now trying to update. Unfortunately, since that time, since we didn't establish a baseline from which to determine changes, we didn't have any metrics to measure changes, we didn't do any monitoring to tell us what's going on. We can't do any analysis, so we have just obviously decided that whatever we had in 2005 didn't work, and we have to change it. There is no logic for that, none whatsoever. Not that I like 2005, because Tom will remember in 2005, I came and told you, there is no best available science that supports what you're doing. Guess what? There was no best available science, and now we know it. So we're changing this one for the sake of change. And the fact that we got several hundred thousand dollars from the state to make a change, I wonder if that makes a difference. How about the critters? We're doing this for the critters. Except there aren't any. Can't find a critter we got to protect. Well, that's kind of sad. We've got this really, really long document that's going to protect critters. We got no critters. We can't even take this stuff and shred it and use it for hamsters because they're not a protected species. How about knowing where all these critical areas are? If you read the CAO, one would think that we've got them all locked down pat. We know where they are. We have the slightest idea where they are, and the only way we find out is when some poor sucker comes in and says, I want a permit. And that's when the fun begins. That's when we go find where the critical areas are, and the person applying for the permit gets to pay for that opportunity. How really neat that is. Let's see. Let's do some reports. That's going to help us. Lots of reports. Man, there are really some neat reports done. Unfortunately, they add a lot of cost to the price of a home or a business, but they add absolutely no value because they're not used in determining what the outcome should be with respect to restrictions or regulations. We've already mapped those out in our ordinance. We know what they're supposed to be. So don't get confused with the professional input. And oh, by the way, if the county doesn't have an equally qualified professional, they don't, we asked. Then the guy asks him for the permit. He gets to pay for one that the county hires to review the work he's done. That's handy. Pay for it both ways. I really love it. It's really, really great. Then there's this thing called notice to title. Lawyers cringe. Please cringe heavily. Notice to title is sort of interesting. First, it's permanent. Can't be revoked. Can't be revised. Can't do anything to it. But what it does do, and you've heard about takings before, it establishes a paramount use for the property that's being covered by that notice. And if you go back and read the AG's opinion, you're going to find out that's a taking because there's no way around it. They have placed the highest and best use on that property that exceeds what the original owner had in mind. One of the things that we have in here as a problem in Kitsap County is called affordable housing. I'm not sure how the CAO, first taking a whole bunch of land and sticking it in buffers, and then second, raising the cost of a business or a permit is good for affordable housing. And the same thing is true. How do you bring a business here? That's why businesses haven't come here. And I'm wondering to myself, okay, and by the way, I have read this thing. I'm the guy with probably 150 of the comments of the 400. How is this good for us? Just exactly how does this work to our benefit? And just in case you're interested in what a 300-foot buffer, radius buffer looks like, if you are familiar with CenturyLink Field, the 300-foot buffer covers CenturyLink Field. And under our given instructions, the Seahawks could play in the parking lot because they couldn't play in the stadium. Thank you.
Thank you. Question? No? Okay. Excuse me. Looks like John Willett. Is that correct? Okay.
Either way. As the family says, will it or won't it? Thomas, nice to see you. We've been on a few committees together, started the Kitsap Forest Bay Coalition together. I'm also a builder, or was a builder, and the commissioners have given me awards for my environmentalism with my business. I've also been working here for quite a few decades on trails and open spaces, not only in the state, Eastern Washington, but here in Kitsap County. The thing I want to talk to you about today is about trails and the CAO and what it says about trails and how that might limit what we're trying to do with trails and open spaces. What we're trying to do with trails and open spaces is get people out on the trails,
get their health better so we don't have things like high insurance rates, strokes, heart attacks. You know what that costs, and you know what a bankruptcy costs, too. Everybody. I do. I've seen it in my business. We're trying to get people out on trails. We're trying to get kids out on trails, teachers out there to get the kids out on trails and get into wetlands, places where they can see frogs, can hear frogs, see birds, aquatic animals, so they can take that knowledge back to their city or their homes, and then they can enjoy it, and then they can preserve it around their homes and what they do every day. This ordinance here keeps my trails out of wetlands. I can't bring those kids in. I can't keep in the adults. I can't bring them into those wetlands for them to see it, for them to get the education they need in order for them to cherish it, and then to bring that back out the community, talk to other people in the community about how cool that is and how nice it is, and wouldn't it be great to do that in my backyard? You know, so I think with the trails thing, my colleague Linda Barry-Mari here is going to call, step up here later on it and talk about another county, Clallam County, and how they approach trails and wetlands. And the biggest thing here is we need common sense, and we already talked about science. Bring that into the community, and then we can have flexibility so we can bring all these people to these forests, to these wetlands, and enjoy it. Doesn't mean we have to just go in there and willy-nilly put them everywhere else. We have to be sensible about it, of course. But I'm really worried about the CAO and how it states. I'm also one of the people that started the Trails Organization and the Non-Motorized Committee here and work with for Public Works, Kitsap County Works. Also one of the people that started the Forest Management Committee for the CAC for County Parks. And I did not know about this rewrite, or did any of my committees know about this rewrite until just the other day. I have good communications with Public Works and Parks. I'm having trouble with DCD for some reason. I don't know why. They didn't come to us. We're county mandated. We're volunteers. Why did they didn't come to us and say, hey, we're going to be able to do this. How about some input about trails? Instead, we see this stuff in trails land on our doorstep, and we're going like, we didn't have any comment. You didn't come to we're your people. Why didn't you talk to us? We're here to serve you. And it's just like, oh, no, here it is. And it's just like, and the comment period was already over. I'm a bit shocked. So hopefully we can address that. We can talk better amongst our CACs. We can talk better amongst our county departments in the future. I thought we've been with the non-motorized stuff, we have just made leapfrogs ahead with our communications together with parks and open space and with public works. Please, DCD, please join us. Please come and communicate with us. We need you, and we need you to talk to us. And we have lots of information we can share with you, and we can build a better place together. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Question?
Questions. Richard.
Mr. Willett, I'm taking a look at the proposal, and I think we're talking about wetland buffer requirements, and there's a section F that deals with trails and trail-related facilities. And what that, I think the big change that is here is that instead of keeping a minimum of 30 feet from the wetland, you have to stay in outside of 25%.
Outside of 25, that's correct, depending on the category.
And so that's your concern, is that changes.
Right. Let me give you an example. Right now we have the Beaver Pond Trail up in Port Gamble. It's a great trail. Goes by the Beaver Pond. I see kids and mothers and teachers on that trail, and they are just at awe of what those beavers are doing, creating these beautiful wetlands. if it's a 25% setback, I can't get those kids in there. I can't get the adults in there. They can't get there. So, yes, that is my objection, that it's the one size fits all. You know, so I think we need to talk about this more and do more research. I love some of these comments that we have tonight. Thank you very much. No, any more questions?
I think Jim had a question. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah. Have you submitted any specific comments as to how this can work better with regard to trails? And if not, can you?
Yes, we can. And Linda is going to get Barry Murray, that was a Holtzville City Councilman and was on North Kitsap Trails Association. She's the past president. I am a past president of North Kitsap Trails Association. And we work closely with Clallam County, with their planning department, with their planners up there in Public Works. I believe she's going to talk about the suggestions and what Clallam County has said, and that we can possibly incorporate that in our new CAC. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see, and the last person we have signed up on this is a Jackie, is it Ruhrman? I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
Kind of close. I'm Jackie Rossmore, and I live here in South Kitsap, and I live on Puget Sound. It's a beautiful place. I've lived there for 40 years. So we do protect it because we like it, and we want to be able to stay there. Well, I got kind of a copy of, actually it's a question. I'm going to ask the commissioners to justify the proposed buffers that will be placed on private property in Kitsap County. I can't find any critical endangered species in our area, but the bald eagles have been removed from the endangered list and no longer require a buffer. You can't impose a buffer on animals that don't live here. The Pacific pond turtle does not live here, hasn't lived here, lives down the road somewhere. Maybe it might live here someday, but I don't think we should have a buffer if he's not here. If he gets here, we'll give him a buffer. Some of the other listed things, one of them that really catches me is killer whales are found in great numbers all over the world. I don't think there's an ocean that doesn't have a killer whale in it. Now, they might be a little different. Like our whales, they don't like leaving. They like fish. They kind of hang around here. And they don't really socialize with the seal eating whales. And so when I look at these things, I think we need some kind of justification for the animal we're trying to protect. And I want to protect the ones that live here. I suppose you could ask me to protect the ones that live in Wenatchee, even though I don't go to Wenatchee. I don't know how you would bill me for that, but I'm sure you would find a way. I'm just concerned about what we are calling critical. I live on saltwater. I have frogs and snakes and all of that stuff. And I'm on saltwater. I'm not up on a pond. I'm not in a, you know, where all the beavers live. So if you could come back and maybe explain to me in something that I can understand how we sort or figure out who we are protecting for what reasons, and not just a blanket statement, I'm going to protect whales that don't live here. Once in a while they come in because they get turned around, but so do birds. And we don't protect every bird in the world that shows up here. So just, you know, regulation of an animal that doesn't live here, might live here someday, might become threatened. The precautionary principles they need to be prohibited if it doesn't apply. And thank you.
Thank you. Okay, looks like one last name, Linda Barry Murray.
Do you need my address and all that, or?
For the record,
sir, Linda please. Barry Murray. My address is 17960 Fjord Drive in Paulsboro. I've been a long-term volunteer, community service, actually been in your shoes, so I know that this is hard, and I do want to thank you for your service because I've worked through a critical area ordinance change before in the city of Paulsboro, and it was a huge amount of work. So I've been heavily involved in trails and parks since the year 2000, and have been, as John mentioned, involved with the North Kitsap Trails Association, been involved with other people here as part of Kitsap Forest and Bay, the whole large conservation project in the North End, and have also worked very closely with the county, both parks and public works staff, on looking at feasibility studies for two major trail corridors. One of our goals that's in the county comprehensive plan is trails. It's a high priority for county residents, and it's a high priority in the county comprehensive plan. Have been heavily involved in both those public outreach processes as well. When you have a critical area ordinance that does two things simultaneously, well, more than two things simultaneously, you're increasing the buffers. For instance, in a category two wetland, you're going from a buffer that's, I think it's 100 feet, and now it's going to go up, if you have what's a more intensive use, possibly up to 300 feet. That's a big change. And when you look at what may be a relatively small to a moderate wetland, and then you maybe possibly triple a buffer for what's an intensive use, that gets to cover a very large amount of area. And in Kitsap, especially North Kitsap, where the glaciers came down multiple times, we have ridges. And when you're looking at non-motorized transportation planning, you have several things you have to deal with simultaneously. You have to have low slopes, because our goal is to have handicapped people, children in training wheels, mom with strollers. You have to have low slopes. And if you are trying to go, say, east-west across North Kitsap, which looks like this in topography, you have challenges. And so when you try and avoid the ridges, when you stay down in the level areas because of the grade requirements from the ADA Act, you find wetlands. You are inevitably hitting wetlands, and even if you're sneaking around it, you cannot avoid all those wetland buffers. The two non-motorized feasibility studies the county is completed last year and is working on this year are both dealing with the fact that there are unavoidable wetlands. So when you talk about those buffers and increase them so dramatically, you are going to hit lots of projects that are near and dear to everybody's hearts and never have enough money. So, you know, big buffers, a lot more expensive requirements on all the various studies, all are going to hit some of those projects that you have a parks department that has not had adequate funding for years. So wanted to mention a couple things and some specific ideas. One is that when we first got involved with doing some planning across counties, we met with Clallam County. Clallam County is kind of the grandfather of low-budget trails. They have done just amazing things for the Olympic Discovery Trail. But one of the things that they did was is they built that capacity into their codes. And in their code, and I do have copies of it here that I will leave here with you, is that for both soft surface trails and for non-motorized trails, they have very specific allowances that are kind of remarkable. For soft surface trails and non-motor and recreation, which doesn't include clearing and grading, they have an outright exemption from the critical areas ordinance. If you can be in the buffer, I'm not saying go across the wetland, and you know, nobody wants to impact things willy-nilly, but they allow it if there's no clearing and grading for birding, for walking. And that, you know, that is a significant difference. And for non-motorized transportation planning, they have some very specific things that allows them within the buffers, if they're a public trail, and it has, I know I'm hearing a beep here, so I'm supposed to be done, but they have taken some very, for instance, here it says trails and trail-related facilities, construction of publicly owned trails on public lands, such as picnic tables, benches, signs, pedestrian bridges, may be allowed in regulated wetlands and associated buffers through the issuance of a certificate of compliance pursuant to this chapter, subject to the following standards. Do I need to?
Go finish your thought.
Okay. Trails, they encourage them to be on existing roads in disturbed areas. Makes sense. You generally want them narrower, but if they're a major regional paved trail, there can be allowed up to be 14 feet because that's what you have to have, the ability to possibly up to 14 feet to be able to get the federal grants. And your county public works department cannot build these facilities unless they can go out and get grants. And get grants means that you have to meet the federal code and meet the ADA. They require that they're only allowed for non-motorized use. And they do have a mitigation plan and have some specifics on surfacing. But their code has very specific ideas for how to help something happen if you want it to happen. And right now I have concerns that if this code were to happen as written, it would be yet another obstacle for trails and non-motorized transportation in this county. And that is something that your comprehensive plan encourages. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Karen?
When you're referring to the Clallam County Code,
yes,
have they updated their critical areas ordinance? Is that included in the latest version?
It was what was online today.
So what's the date of that code?
I just printed it off what's online today. So okay. I don't know when they adopted it.
So you don't know if it's under the old manual or the new manual?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So I guess that does wrap up our public hearing. Maybe if you would run down kind of as we move towards deliberations. Is today also the last official day for submittal of written comments? Is that correct as well? So maybe give us a rundown on that, and then I guess moving forward.
So Jim Bolger, Department of Community Development. So the process from here on out is we have deliberation. Your first day of deliberation is scheduled for May 16th. I believe we have that starting at 1 o'clock here in the chambers. We have a subsequent day scheduled for May 23rd, and that's an all-day session. And we figure that depending on how far you get through the 16th, we'll determine whether or not we need that second day of deliberation, and we can discuss what the start time would be for that second day. So what we'll be doing now is from the hearings, we'll be taking the public comment that has been provided, both oral and in written, and we've also received some electronic submittals while the hearing was open during these last week and a half. We'll be incorporating those into the matrix of comments that you have along with county responses. And when we come back on the 16th, we'll be taking you through those sections and answering those comments and questions that you have. And you'll be going through a process of motions and developing the Planning Commission's recommendation for the department.
So the 16th is 2 weeks. Just out of curiosity, when do you think you might have the comment matrix prepared with staff's responses to the comments?
We hope to be able to get that back to you with a week before we reconvene on the 16th so that you have time to review that.
Tom?
And in order to do that, do you have a suggested cutoff date for this public input?
We had hoped that the end of tonight's hearing would be the end of public comment for the Planning Commission's consideration. We do have two hearings scheduled for the board's consideration, and that's also an opportunity for the public to come back in and provide additional comment based on the recommendation from the Planning Commission and the department's endorsement of that, or maybe we differ from the Planning Commission's recommendation. All of that will be available online for folks to look at.
So, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, go ahead and close the public hearing.
I was just curious. There were, Kathleen made comments about the prosecuting attorney weighing in on some of the comments regarding court cases. Mm-hmm. Court cases continue to be brought up. So we will have that, once again, a week before we get into our deliberations. A week from today, you're hoping we'll have those? Or when do you think we might see that?
So the prosecuting attorney advises the department. And so what we can do is we can take some of the analysis that they have provided for us, and we can provide that in we can elaborate on the references in the comment section to the court cases. So hopefully we can have that augment the current responses to those cases that have been cited in the public comment. We'll augment those responses to provide more specific information based on the prosecutor's analysis.
Okay. Richard?
Just as someone new to the process, will staff prepare a set of proposed recommendations for the commission based upon the public input we received? So if after looking at the comments, staff says, geez, that's a great idea, will we find that in staff's comments, or will there be a formal presentation to the Planning Commission about let's change subparagraph F?
There already are some examples in the comment matrix where the county did say, yeah, well, we need to clarify that section, or we need to make changes on that. We probably won't make direct changes to the draft between now and your deliberations, but I think that can be part of the conversation that we have during your deliberations, is whether or not the county would support the changes as they go forward. I think that there have been a number of changes that we've heard both from the public comments as well as during the hearings that are reasonable and could be supported by the county, particularly some of the bringing in local expertise to consider, you know, kind of site-specific measures.
And since you mentioned that these comments will be ready a week before the 16th, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Will those comments be in hard print copy, or will it be all online?
For the Planning Commission, we'll give you hard copies to go through, but it'll be available to the public online.
And will those be sent out, or shall we pick them up here?
I don't know what the best way. We'll get back to you on the way to do that would be. We may be able to shuttle these around the county and get them to you personally so that you don't have to travel down from the far reaches of the county. We'll get you hard copies of everything.
Sure.
After hearing tonight's comments, was Public Works involved with this drafting of the changes?
Public Works, the document was circulated internally, so Public Works had an opportunity to review the draft. The Fair and Parks Department looked at it, and we had an opportunity to sit down with them before we went out to the public, so they've all seen those drafts. As you are also aware, we've gone out to the Citizens Advisory Committees and made informational presentations. There have been a number of press releases, and we've had individual meetings with groups, both in terms of us proactively going out, but also being invited in.
Do we have minutes of those meetings and what subjects were brought up and what was reviewed?
The only one that I'm aware of where there are minutes was when we met with the Kitsap Building Association.
Okay.
They did provide some meeting minutes, and a lot of those minutes are reflected in the letter and that came out of that. It was really an informational meeting, so it was an opportunity to discuss specific provisions that they had issues with and possible alternatives, and I think those alternatives that were discussed, many of them are reflected in the letter that had been submitted by several people over the course of the hearing.
Okay.
But we can certainly provide you with the minutes of that meeting as well.
Okay, well, I guess we will officially close both the public and written public hearing for the CAO. Thank you, everyone, for testifying. And with that, we will go to the work study transfer of development rights.
Oh,
is there a desire for a short break? Yes, I've had one expressed. We'll take 5 minutes, okay? Thank you.